Hey there, sex fans, welcome back. Today is Wednesday, April 8th, 2009, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge.
Do you mind if I ask you something? Have you any history of mental illness?
I don't think so. I wonder why you're asking. Listen, I am your host, though. That savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick. Today, I have the distinct pleasure of welcoming the Seattle-based yet nationally known and respected bondage artist, educator, and dom, who goes by the name Max. We'll be exploring all sorts of interesting topics, not least among them is his polyamorous life with Mistress Matisse. This is exciting and thought-provoking stuff, sex fans. You don't want to miss it. Max is my latest guest in this series of podcast interviews I'm doing called Sex Edge-ucation. As you know, we're taking a look at the world of fetish sex, kink, and alternative lifestyles. We're touching on topics both familiar and exotic, and we're chatting with prominent educators, practitioners, and advocates of unconventional sexual expressions and lifestyles from all over the world. You can visit Max at his website, bondagelessons.com. Today's podcast is brought to you by the ideal sponsor for this fetish and kink series, Dr. Dick's Stockroom. You'll find this treasure trove of sexually stimulating toys, implements, fetish wear, and gear right there on the front page of drdicksexadvice.com. Look for the My Stockroom tab. You'll enjoy shopping at Dr. Dick's Stockroom because it's just so damn fun and, I might add, easy. Yes-a-ree, sex fans, you can spare yourself the embarrassment of skulking down to your local sex emporium to pick up all those nasty toys you've been drooling over. You can forget about seedy storefronts in unsavory neighborhoods, and you don't have to worry about leering salesmen scrutinizing what you buy. Why? Because you shop from the privacy of your own computer. Thanks to Dr. Dick's Stockroom, it's never been easier or more discreet to be a big fat pervert. Be sure to take a moment out of your hectic schedule and visit My Stockroom today. You'll be so glad you did.
Sorry. Don't you call yourself a medical man? First requirement of a medical man is to have no feelings.
Okay, if you say so. Let's get on with the show.
Welcome, Max, and thanks for joining us. I'm so delighted that we could make this time to be together. Would you like to say hello to the nice people?
I would love to. Thanks, Richard, and hello, everybody out there in podcast land.
Good. So it's good to make this local connection. You and I have never met, but I've heard so much about you from a number of other people, and so it's wonderful that I have this opportunity to meet you here in your beautiful house in Seattle. And from visiting your website, one gets the impression that with all the classes that you teach, that the Pacific Northwest in general and Seattle in particular is a hotbed of perversion. Is this true or is this just wishful thinking?
Well, I'm a fan of wishful thinking. I actually think it is true. I travel around a fair amount, and I think Seattle is a remarkable town this way. I think it's got a tremendous lineage of kink and sex positive stuff in ways that a lot of other towns don't have. And in particular, in terms of kink stuff, there's stuff going all the way back to 1986 or so. There was a group called the National Leather Association that started here in Seattle. The Seattle Men and Leather Organization, which is another men's kink organization, has been going since 89, so that's close to its 20-year birthday here, I think. There's a tremendous nationally known Leather Day community here, which has done a couple of nationally known events called Power Surge and Wicked Women here, starting again 15 years ago. And in fact, that's the reason that Leather Day community is the reason that my primary partner, Mistress Matisse, moved here from Georgia a bunch of years ago.
Yes. Anybody who is familiar with Seattle knows Mistress Matisse, don't you know?
Many do.
Well, good.
It's also my theory, for whatever it's worth, that Seattle's the perfect size for this. Every time I go to San Francisco or L.A. or New York, I think there should be this wonderful, active, kinky, queer, sexy, poly whatever community, and what seems to happen in the larger cities is it actually gets a little more fragmented. And so my theory is
I think so too because it you get in like San Francisco where I came from is the black disabled lesbians.
Mm-hmm.
Kink lesbians have their own place, and they stay there, and they don't mix around. So Seattle is like that. Besides, Seattle is in terms of leather, and its weather is good for leather.
That's true.
Because you don't want to be a leather man in like Miami or something.
No, Matisse actually spent some time growing up in Florida. In fact, and she started out sort of a little goth and a little leather, and she talked about just what level of commitment it took to be. Be wearing your leathers in Fort Lauderdale in the summer.
I love it. I've spent a great deal of time on your website, bondagelessons.com, and you have your hands full, so to speak. You eat, drink, and sleep this stuff, right?
Seems like it sometimes.
Although, looking around at his beautiful home, there is no indication whatsoever of hidden dungeons anywhere. But then again, I haven't looked around other than the living room, so...
Because they're hidden dungeons.
Thus,
Excellent.
Excellent. Good, good, good. Your site is so chock full of great information and links, I hardly know where to begin our conversation. Perhaps we could begin at the beginning. Your bio page says this: Max has been active in Seattle BDSM community since 1992 and has been teaching bondage, BDSM, and poly workshops since 1999. While he enjoys and is proficient with a wide range of BDSM arts, Max especially likes bondage for its own sake and coupled with SM activities. Max shares his love of bondage through his workshops, which we'll get to in a bit. And while his personal scenes tend toward suspension and relatively rigorous bondage, he loves teaching entry-level bondage workshops and watching people learn to tie each other up. I would suspect that that's great joyful.
It's big fun.
Max also serves as a producer, chef, instructor for Seattle's monthly bondage workshop series, which has run continuously since 2003. Max has been actively polyamorous since 1998 and has two wonderful partners. That is a mouthful, too. You hardly have time to touch yourself impurely from the looks of things.
Well, it's of course only a matter of scheduling to make sure that you have time to touch yourself impurely. And like anybody, there's certainly lots of priorities in my life. But let me talk for a minute about me.
Since good, good, good. Yes, thank you.
Go into workshops and sort of the more professional stuff a little. BDSM is, I'm 52. BDSM is something I discovered really pretty late in life when I was about 35, in my mid-30s, about 20 years ago. And the way I identify now really is BDSM is something that I am as opposed to something that I do. Mm-hmm. It's an identity is probably mm-hmm. the best way of saying it, much like being queer. It's not an activity, it's not a hobby, it's mm-hmm. not something I do on the weekends. It's really a core part of how I define myself and mm-hmm. how I sort of move through the world.
So your leather is not a fashion statement necessarily?
It's not. It's there's all kinds of crony stuff about leather in the heart and all of that stuff, and I kind of avoid all of that. But it's BDSM and leather really affect all of my interactions. It's very much the lens that I view the world through.
Mm-hmm.
Often not overtly, of course. I buy groceries and I have a professional life that doesn't have anything to do with BDSM and have lots of other interactions mm-hmm. that don't look overtly like leather or BDSM at all. But what it certainly does is it makes me thoughtful and informs my relationships. It makes me think hard about power dynamics. It makes me really attentive to communication because that's such a big part of kink and BDSM and poly. And so we can sort of talk more about all the busy pieces of my life, but while a lot of my life isn't overtly kinky, there's a sort of a kink veneer over
right.
everything.
Right. And I'm hearing that a lot from the people that I'm interviewing for this series. That their commitment to this is more than skin deep, and it really shows. And I suspect that there's also a price to be paid for that. Is there not? I mean, being the culture being that what it is it tends to marginalize people who are slightly different.
That's absolutely true, and we all have stories about that. I have, for better or worse, I have fewer of those stories than some because, I'm pretty passable, from the outside look like a pretty depressingly normal straight person.
In Seattle.
And B, I'm in, despite my level of involvement and activity, there are a lot of contexts in which I'm really not very out about my leather or my poly.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly for professional reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Much of my family knows. Turns out some of my family is also kinky.
Mm-hmm.
But I've discovered that the worst responses I've had to all of that have been about poly, not about kink.
Interesting, yeah. I want to investigate that in time for sure, because that's such an interesting and timely topic for so many people, myself as well as my audience. One of the things that I wanted to ask, Max is your nom de smut, would it not be? I mean, this is not your real name?
That's correct.
No, good. And for obvious reasons, just what you explained moments ago, that's right?
Yep.
Good, yeah. So I gather from what I read on your sites that you are way more than simply an educator, and you've addressed this a bit here, but you are an activist as well?
Yes and no. Sort of partly because of the outness and partly because of sort of my own, you know, what I think, where my skills lie, I focus mainly on education.
Mm-hmm.
I have not done a lot of sign carrying. I've not done a lot of sort of overt political stuff,
mm-hmm.
Or that kind of activism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Having said that, I think anybody who is alt or queer or, you know, in some ways different about their sexuality is almost by definition political about it, because alternative sexuality really is political. I mean, there are expectations and rules and political and social forces coming to bear that sort of oppose what we want to be.
That's right.
And even just sort of trying to be left alone and do your own thing involves some amount of activism. And I've also been involved for many, many years with the ACLU and another organization called the NCSF, the National Coalition for Sexual Freedom, which...
Yeah. So I would call that activism. I mean, you know, carrying a sign in the street, you know, is not necessarily the only way one is an activist. And but being sex positive, being, you know, forthright about that, being out to as many people as one can be about who one authentically is, and then living authentically and owning one's sexuality, I think is, you know, the beginning of activism, at least to my mind.
I agree. Even if that activism looks like, you know, one person at a time, as opposed to something larger.
Yes. And so that's why I want to make these connections for our audience, so that, you know, people understand that, you know, one does not necessarily have to be a sign-carrying person in order to be an activist, because there's lots of people out there who, you know, are quietly making their way and making a difference in the lives of the people around them, and but for whatever reason, either not inclined or not able to be, you know, standing on a street corner. So good for us, I think.
I do too. Although I will confess to some dissonance around talking to people about empowerment and being communicative and being out and then not being all the way out.
So yes, well,
I mean, that's just real life.
Yes. And, you know, out is as out does, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So you do a lot of your workshops through the Center for Sex Positive Culture here in Seattle. And this is not your typical community college, I'm gathering.
No, it's not. I wish it was, but no, it's not.
Wouldn't it be great if we had college credits?
It would be. I mean, I think some of that is coming.
Yeah.
There certainly are sexuality and alternative sexuality classes out there, but they're a little token, I think, in larger programs.
Right. So would you mind giving us some highlights from some of your courses? What do they involve? Who is the intended audience and such?
I would be pleased to do that. And so I do teach at the Center for Sex Positive Culture, which is also known as the Wet Spot, which is a sort of a prior name and a name they've tried to shake, but
it's
an easier mouthful than Center for Sex Positive Culture,
that's
I think.
Right.
So I do teach at the Wet Spot. I also teach a bunch of other places, and I do private lessons, and I do do personal coaching and sort of another of other venues. Mm-hmm. But the public workshops tend to fall in a couple categories. There's despite my website and my sort of identity as bondagelessons.com, I teach broader BDSM topics also. Mm-hmm. And a lot of what I do is sort of entry-level, technique-based, mm-hmm. And it's very specifically kind of how do you tie a knot, what's a fun and rigorous or erotic or somehow, you know, aesthetically pleasing position to put somebody in for bondage, what can you do with a piece of bondage. So some of it is very sort of basic building block oriented. Mm-hmm. And then a bunch of it, and in some ways the most gratifying stuff that I teach, is the sort of more advanced stuff, if you will, which tends to be less about physical technique in terms of how to do something, but more about why you do it and style and intent and the connection you build by doing it. Mm-hmm. And of course all those things are harder to teach, but they're just a lot more rewarding when you get there.
Right.
And a lot of it is like driving a car, where you start out driving a car and you're very focused on the brake pedal and the gas pedal and the steering wheel, mm-hmm. and you're looking 10 feet ahead of the car and you're going, oh, there's this thing, I need to jerk to the right, I need to jerk to the left, mm-hmm. you know, watch the little bump in the road. And then as you get better at that, you start realizing, oh my gosh, there's things a block away that I should be looking at.
Right. And becomes, you know, intuitive after a while.
Exactly.
Once you have the basics down. Would you suggest that anyone who is interested in dabbling in BDSM ought to take a class instead of just launching in on his or her own?
Anyone is a pretty broad statement, but I think that there are some tremendous advantages to taking some kind of a workshop. Mm-hmm. One of them, frankly, is just to find some community and to get some validation and to be able to, it's kind of amazing, particularly for those of us who spend some time at home in a very private, sort of unaware way, to look around and say, wow, I'm in a room full of 20 or 50 people who like this and who all seem like nice people and none of them are being arrested or acting pathological or, you know, they're all happy and healthy and enjoying themselves. So some of that is just playing really good in terms of empowerment and sort of self-image, I think. Some of it is really good in terms of, oh, here's some technique that I hadn't thought about and here's some ways to do stuff. And certainly some of it is about, I think we all start being less thoughtful about our BDSM and our play and just sort of working intuitively and from the gut. Mm-hmm. And I think there's value in being more thoughtful and more analytical about it. Mm-hmm. And in some ways, the perfect end result, sort of going back to the car analogy, is after you learn a bunch of that more left brain stuff, then you can sort of forget all of that because you've internalized it and it becomes more automatic.
Well, you know, I'm a big proponent of starting with basics. Like, you know, my philosophy about being a good lover, for example, is learning all one can about oneself through masturbation and then masturbating with your partner so that you learn something about your partner's sexual response. Mm-hmm. And it would seem to me that, you know, that same mindset might be operative in terms of BDSM as well. Like, I mean, if I wouldn't know what to do. I mean, I think it's fascinating. I think it's interesting. I haven't, you know, dabbled all that much. I've been on the receiving end much more than the giving end. But if I was, you know, invited to, you know, tie someone up, I actually wouldn't know where to begin. And I may even have, may put off the idea of doing it for fear that I might injure somebody. Mm-hmm. So taking a class for me would be like, you know, liberating. It would just say, okay, I got the basics. I know what to do and what not to do, and you know,
which I think is a great motivation. I mean, lots of people have fantasies or seen a picture on the internet or you know something they want to emulate because it turns them on, and you know, in one way or another, either aesthetically
or sexually.
Or get sort of dragged in, sort of half interested by a partner who's much more interested. Or I mean, we all have different kind of different paths there. But it really is both permission and kind of empowerment in terms of, all right, I think I know enough to, as you said, not hurt anybody.
Yeah.
You know, not embarrass myself, which is, you know, let's face it, a pretty powerful motivator for a lot of people. And feel like I'm doing some competent job at this thing and adding to the experience instead of it being a distraction.
So would the same be true in terms of the person, you know, the bottom, the recipient, you know, how to communicate, how to let go, how to, you know, relax into it? Is that part of...
Very much. I really try hard to encourage bottoms. In fact, let's come back to that. Let's just pause for some terminology.
Okay.
In fact,
all right, good.
There's when I teach, there's lots of sort of buzzwords and terminology, and I sort of try to push past a lot of that because it's buzzwords and terminology. Top and bottom are good terms, though. When we say top, we generally mean the person who is driving the activity in sort of whatever context it is. So if we're talking about a bondage top, it's the person who's tying the knots, and the bottom then is the person who's being tied up. If we're talking about a whipping or a flogging or something like that, a spanking, the top is the person who's doing the spanking, the bottom is the person who's getting spanked.
Uh-huh.
So much of the sort of the obvious target for a lot of these workshops is tops, because you look at a course description and it says, okay, come learn how to do these knots and these positions and this thing and that thing, and it's like, oh, it's the tops that do all that.
That's right.
I think there's tremendous value in bottoms learning all of that for a couple of reasons. One of them is probably half of all of those workshops is not just about hand technique and how to tie a knot. It's about being thoughtful when you're doing bondage, and it's about intent and connection. It's about safety stuff. It's about a lot of things that are not just the top's responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
Second, I think it's very useful for bottoms to understand enough technique about whatever they're doing to be able to evaluate potential partners. I mean, there are lots of safety and compatibility issues, and I think starting out as a bottom and not being able to evaluate a top and just saying, oh, I hear this is a good rope top, I think I'll go off to his house and get tied up, may or may not be the best idea without being able to maybe watch them play once and say, are they competent or not?
Yeah. And do they respond to the needs and or desires of the bottom?
Exactly.
Or is it all about him or
because,
her?
Because competence is a bigger word than technique. Yeah.
That's right.
It's are they competent in reading the bottom and in understanding and staying within established limits, in understanding physiology and connecting at an emotional level, if that's the intent, all that stuff beyond the, you know, could they do a hog tie so you couldn't get away?
Right. Interesting, because I've asked this question of some of the other people that I've interviewed for this series. Do you suggest that, or do you ascribe to the notion that being a good top is one ought to bottom from time to time, or to be a good bottom, one ought to top from time to time?
Well, I'll give you what I think, and I'll give you what I've done, because they're actually different. And I'm faintly embarrassed about that, but it is the reality of my life. First of all, I would kind of take the word should out of those. I don't think to be a good top, you should be a bottom first, or that to be a good bottom, you should be a top. What I will say is that traditionally, coming out of sort of the older leather tradition, everyone started as a bottom and kind of worked their way up to a top.
Interesting.
And much of that tradition is a little older than I am, and I've sort of caught the edges of that as it faded, but do not claim to be a part of that older leather tradition. But much of what I've heard there is it was the transition from bottom to top was not so much about being promoted or, you know, okay, you've you know, some committee has met and said that you're now a top. I've had two people I respect tell me that the moment for them was when they sort of either looked around a room or were in the middle of a scene and realized as bottoms that they were actually more competent than the tops in the room.
No kidding.
And they kind of, and both of them actually spoke of that as sort of a grudging acceptance that they were now tops, as
wow.
opposed to a crowning achievement of, look, I'm there finally.
Wow.
So many, many tops start out as bottoms. Many do what's called switching, where they go back and forth,
mm-hmm.
Sometimes, you know, with different partners, sometimes within the context of the same relationship. My personal background is that I have done almost no bottoming. I kind of started out as a top. I've had one or two experiences that are, in some ways, look like bottoming that weren't. I did an energy pull with Fakir and got a bunch of big hooks put in my chest and some stuff like that. But it's in terms of my intent, if you will, it was more experiential than about bottoming to a person, which
right.
to me is a different thing.
Right.
I'm not opposed to bottoming, but it's just never called to me. It's just not something that gets my dick hard or engages me intellectually or emotionally. And I do feel a little funny about that, because really all of the people I most respect either came from a bottom space or actively are switches. Mistress Matisse being a great example. My primary partner, who is a tremendous bottom and probably one of the fiercest and most competent tops I've ever
right.
run into.
Yes, and she writes her column, yes?
Yes, and
right.
and very eloquent, yes.
From that position, yes. One of the things that is curious to me, and I know it will be to my audience, is that we have just spent X amount of time talking about this issue and not once mentioned the notion of sex. So what I and my audience am learning is that the whole BDSM subculture is BDSM for and of itself. It's not necessarily a sexual activity.
That's a tremendously interesting conversation, I think, actually.
Okay.
Many of us start out with this coming from a sexual place, and so
uh-huh.
and so we all kind of grow up and we say, okay, sex, that's good, however we define sex. At some point you may say, you know, this BDSM thing looks cool, let's fold that into my sex life. It becomes some part of your foreplay, some part of your sex, some adjunct to what you're doing. And then at some point, many of us go, actually, the BDSM part isn't so bad even without the sex once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
And to speak strictly for myself here, I guess, at some point I kind of realized this is really its own thing. And there is absolutely a lot of overlap with my sexuality, but there are a lot of other motivations for
right.
BDSM.
Right.
When people ask me why I do kink and why I do BDSM, for me, I'm actually very clear on the answer, because I've thought about it a lot. It's the most effective way I know to build intimacy.
Right.
And intimacy, of course, is, you know, there's a relationship between intimacy and sex, but God knows you can have one without the other.
Yes.
And so BDSM is usually about intimacy. It's about intense experiences. It's about deep and intense relationships. Those might include sex. They might not.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly in the interests of both health in terms of STDs and whatnot, and managing emotional and relationship complexity. One of the cool things about differentiating between BDSM and sex is I do BDSM with lots and lots of people in a way that I would not feel comfortable doing sex. I mean, I have multiple...
Genital sex.
Exactly, genital sex. There's a great definition of sex. Let me think, who is this from? This is from... Give me a minute, I'll forget who to attribute it to, because that's important. But there's this great definition of sex as anything that, I'm losing the exact quote, it's anything that gets someone closer to an orgasm, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that definition, because it, you know, it can be two-person genital sex, it can be masturbation, it can be somebody sitting in a corner and kind of thinking impure thoughts. It can be tying somebody up, because later on you're going to go home and fuck your primary partner.
Right.
There's lots of
right,
ways
right,
to define
right.
it there. But in terms of sort of anything that's classically sex, I do SM with lots of people and a variety of people that I really would not necessarily want as sexual partners, mm-hmm. but cherish the BDSM experiences I have with them.
And that's basically what was my next question, and because I'm hearing this from a lot of the educators and people that I've been talking to in this series, is that they can be intimate with a wider range of people in terms of BDSM and kink than they can be or wish to be in terms of genital sex, which is a very interesting kind of thing. Because, correct me if I'm wrong, I mean, does not BDSM, as it's practiced most often, involve nudity and at least for one or another of the partners?
Not both? Certainly often. And it's worth noting that there's a big difference between public BDSM play and private, I think.
Right.
Seattle is really fortunate in that we have the CSPC, the Wet Spot.
Right.
And there are a couple other venues, although the CSPC is where most of the action is, where you can go out and do public scenes, where you can tie somebody up from the ceiling and spin them around, or you can put them up against a rack and flog them, or you can tie them up on the floor and roll them around and fuck them or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And what you will see in a public setting, in most public settings as I travel around the country, is that 90% of the scenes don't involve anything that looks like sex.
Mm-hmm.
That tends to be, in my experience, different in the men's community. Men's BDSM parties have a lot more overt sexuality in them, which is really cool.
you don't say.
I've heard.
Men. They're pigs, I know.
They're all pigs and dogs, I'm proud of us. But certainly lots of people have different styles in public and in private,
yeah.
for any of a number of reasons.
Yeah.
It's also worth saying that there are a lot of motivations for doing BDSM, some of which is sex or sort of sexual energy, but there are other reasons to do it. Lots of tops that I know, and in fact, all of us have sort of components of this in all of our play. A lot of us like the aesthetics of it. You know, it looks pretty. It's visually mm-hmm. stimulating.
Mm-hmm.
There's a for tops again. There's a tremendous satisfaction in feeling like you've mastered a technique, if you will. You've done something well.
Mm-hmm. And they don't call you masters for nothing.
Well, they don't. Because some of it is not the corny stuff with the leather master's cap. Well, that was hard to do, and I did a good job of it. And like anything else, that's pleasing.
Yeah.
It's it's like riding a motorcycle and getting a corner ride.
Yeah.
For bottoms, there's lots of other motivations, again, that aren't sexual. It may be about catharsis. It may be about pushing yourself to do something you didn't think you could do.
Right.
It may be about pleasing somebody else in a way that's not sexual.
Right.
Much of my personal BDSM is, in fact, really all of my personal BDSM is based on dominance and submission and power play that way.
Right.
And while I do lots of physical stuff with whips and needles and rope and whatnot, really the root of it for me is that DS relationship.
Right.
To the point of I have scenes and, in fact, some whole relationships that are based on DS and service where nobody ever gets naked.
Right.
It's about, show up at my house and do something nice for me.
Right, 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 right. Oh, look at the time. Oi, 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 I'm not nearly done with you. Can I invite you back for next week?
You sure can. I'd be happy to do that, Richard.
Excellent.
We'll see you.
And I get to come back to your beautiful house. Listen, before we go, could you give us your website address and walk us around a little bit so we can visit you in cyberspace in between this event and next week?
I sure can, because there'll be a whole week and we'll just do it as homework.
Excellent. Them do it.
Ooh, I like that. The website, again, is bondagelessons.com, and it's not a particularly sexy website. It's really about information and about my teaching schedule. There's information about upcoming workshops there. There's a bio. There's a little bit of information for event organizers. And I also do private lessons, and more I do effectively sort of BDSM lifestyle coaching, and so there's information on that there also.
Good, good. Thank you so much for your time, and we'll be back next week.
Thanks, Richard.
Thank you.
What a charming man.
He sure is. Well, that's it for today, Zex fans. Tune in next week for part two of my discussion with Max and more sex advice with an edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is Dr. Dick's Stockroom. Listen up, you guys. If your sex life needs a little sprucing up, and whose doesn't, I want you to mosey on over to my online sex emporium and pick out something really naughty for yourself, or one of the other pervs in your life. I mean, if you can't find what you're looking for in my stockroom, you'd better call off the search right now. Dr. Dick has put together a dazzling array of products that will liven up even the most ho-hum sex life. Not sure what to buy? Take a look at my monthly, ever-so-popular sex toy awareness feature. You can find a link to this amazing resource in the category section in the sidebar of my site. You can also visit the product reviews page. There's a tab for that at the top of drdicksexadvice.com. The My Stockroom tab is right there too. And look for all of Dr. Dick's podcasts on iTunes. You'll find me in the podcast section under Health Subcategory Sexuality. Or just search for Dr. Dick's Sex Advice. And don't forget to subscribe. Leave a comment when you do.
Joyce, can I go to the toilet?
I'm not Joyce, but when you gotta go, you gotta go. So help yourself. Until next week, remember, sex is good, and good sex? Why, that's even better. Over and out.